bathroom next door if you want to take that paint off your face. The rain has streaked it.
It ain't paint. It's makeup.
And it's not streaked. It's supposed to look like this.
It is? Well, don't mind me. I'm afraid I'm not aware of what's current and what isn't.
Junk Food Dinner, Episode 131. As Schlocktober rages on, this week we examine three films about killer playmates. Up first, when a God-fearing woman purchases a possessed ventriloquist dummy from a magic shop, her deepest carnal desires are unleashed, and lots of puppet sex ensues in this shot-on-video trash piece from 1984, Black Devil Doll from Hell. Next is the further misadventures of Andy Barclay and his mischievous, murderous little buddy as we talk Child's Play 2 from 1990. Finally, after being stranded by a storm on the longest night of all time, six travelers go head-to-head with a veritable army of bloodthirsty toys in Stuart Gordon's 1987 film, Dogs.
Snap out of it! You act like you've never seen a dead body before!
Welcome to Junk Food Dinner, episode 131. This is the podcast where each week we scour the internet, video stores, and cable television looking for the most outrageous and interesting cult films. We're not professional film journalists or critics by any means. We are simply three geeks from Ohio with entirely too much time on our hands. In Ohio, I am Kevin Moss, and I'm joined by my co-host Mark Summers in New York and Parker Posey in California. Every week, we'll each bring a cult favorite to the table, recalling our personal experiences with the film, discussing its merits, and arguing why we did or did not enjoy it. This week, it's the third week of Schlocktober, our month-long cavalcade of classic horror genre theme shows all throughout October. This week we take a look at three killer doll movies, and we dig into Black Devil Doll from Hell from 1984, Child's Play 2 from 1990, and finally Dolls from 1987. But first, gents, how's it hanging?
I'm hanging nicely.
I'm a germaphobe, but I'm okay.
I'm just keeping it super sloppy.
Nice. So yeah, here we are at our Dolls episode. This is a first for Schlocktober. We've never done a killer doll show, although it seems like killer doll movies throughout the 80s and early 90s were all over the place. Aside from the ones we did for the show, it seems like there was a ton of them. There's, of course, the Puppet Master series. There was Dolly Dearest. Do you guys remember that one at all?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
oh,
yeah. After watching Black Devil Doll, I was real sad we didn't do Dolly Dearest.
Or anything else?
Yeah, or anything at all. Gutter balls.
Dolly Dearest is freaky too.
Yeah. So I've heard. I haven't seen it. I've heard that it's scary. The trailer looks scary.
Does the Indian in the cupboard count?
Yeah, I'll say it does.
Cool.
That counts. That. I bought a 3-pack the other day at Walmart that has Demonic Toys, Doll Man, and Doll Man versus Demonic Toys. So I'm excited about that.
It's like a sandwich.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, certainly the killer doll goes back ways. Have you guys ever seen the Twilight Zone episode Talkie Tina?
Oh yeah,
it's a good one. And then there's those killer dolls in Barbarella.
Mm-hmm.
So dolls, they've been murderous for a long time. But yeah, it's cool to finally do a theme show talking about some killer dolls.
Yeah, I'm surprised there hasn't been a movie where a real doll comes to life and starts killing people.
Oh, you mean like those weird sex dolls?
Yeah,
there probably is. It's probably pornography.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Oh, we can't forget the episode of The Simpsons where the Krusty doll comes to life. That was a great one.
The Frogurt is also cursed. Yeah. So, I mean, I'll just get into this now rather than bog down the show later. But speaking of freaky dolls, I know this has come up on the show before, but I used to play that game, The Seventh Guest. It was a PC game. It was a puzzle game where it was like a first-person puzzle game, and you wake up in this like freaky mansion, and it turns out that this mansion was the home of a doll maker who would trap people's souls in these dolls, and you know, mystery happened. But I was real into it; it was really good. And then there was a sequel called the 11th Guest, but the 11th Hour, 7th Guest, 11th Hour. Yeah, they were really good, and that also had a ton of like freaky doll shit in it. So yeah, there's a rich storied history of the freaky murderous doll.
Yeah, absolutely. I think dolls are just inherently creepy.
Yeah, they have dead eyes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think people
and their hands are creepy too.
Tiny little hands.
Yeah.
Tiny hands are always scary.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I'm going out for Halloween as CeeLo Green. Yeah.
Good one.
Thanks.
Even David Hess thought that was funny.
I don't get it.
He's got tiny hands.
Does he?
Yeah, he's got wicked small hands. Like, he could probably fit both of his hands inside his mouth. It's absurd, the smallness of his hands.
Yeah, especially for the size of the guy, too. That, you know.
Sure, yeah.
Disproportionate.
Yeah, it's weird. It's like a Salvador Dali painting.
It looks like Tom Servo from Mr.
Wow. Well, I will be Google image searching that during the break. That's it's something.
It's bizarre. It will haunt your dreams. But yeah, people seem to be real scared of dolls. When I was little, my brother had a talking doll of the baby dinosaur from Dinosaurs.
Would you care to do an impression of that?
I would have to watch the YouTube first. I don't remember much about it.
It's on Instant Watch right now. Just so you know.
I'm a not the mama, see? Is that good?
That's close. Yeah, that's pretty good.
It's like if the baby dinosaur and JFK
Why
were.
Is he like JFK?
Yeah. I'm a dinosaur.
Ich bin ein not the mama.
But he got so scared of this.
That we've ever done.
he got so scared of this. He was like real little at the time, like 5 or 6, that we had to throw it away. He was afraid it was going to kill him.
Rightfully so.
Yeah.
It was frightening.
It may have.
Yeah,
you guys did the right thing.
It did blink on its own, which is fucking frightening.
Fuck that. Why would something... Oh, no.
Yeah.
Wait, was it supposed to?
Yeah, yeah.
Is that like a feature?
I think, yeah, if I remember correctly, it was supposed to blink while talking.
With dream-haunting eyes.
With eyes that peer into your very soul.
Now with tinier hands. Shit.
All right, well, on that note, let's get into some junk mail. I got some good junk mail this week. You know it's a good week for junk mail when the first message we get is titled Fisher Stevens Balls. And this is from... This is from Rob. He says, "Hi, I just stumbled upon your super old podcast about the Neon Maniacs and the Burning, and I thought it was odd that you didn't mention the part right before the Raft Massacre where Fisher Stevens' balls are hanging out of the leg of his shorts. I always thought it was way funnier than George Costanza's ass. Anyway, just in case you didn't know, there's another little goofy tidbit about that movie. Thanks from
Rob." Yeah.
So, yeah, awesome. We'll have to go back and...
Awesome. Reaction.
I'm going back. I'm looking for Fisher Stevens balls because
I like Fisher Stevens, but I don't know if I'm going to go back looking for his balls.
I am, because I've researched this a little bit and I found out that his balls make an appearance in every movie that he's been in. In Hackers, they're hanging out of his pants when he's riding that skateboard.
I remember in Brother from Another Planet, they're just laying on the subway seat.
Yeah.
I think we should do a theme show of movies that have secret balls in the background. Like Teen Wolf could be there. And
yeah, we could do that episode of Three's Company where John Ritter's balls came out of his pants.
Yeah.
That would be lovely.
That's Five's Company.
Excellent. The next piece of junk mail we got is a voicemail from another voicemail from the sweetest man alive, Mr. Matthew Sweetman.
Hi, this is Matthew Sweetman again. You know, but I was walking back to my room from Quiznos, and I started listening to Terry Reed's album, Seeds of Memory, and it made me think of how you guys should, if you want to, review the Rob Zombie movie, The Devil's Rejects, because that's like his best movie, I guess. And it has Sid Haig in it, and Bill Moseley, and I love them. And, oh, it has Ken Flory, who was in the original Dawn of the Dead, and he was Keenan's father on Keenan and Kel. So I just imagine Keenan's dad running a brothel. And I think that's wonderful. It also has the lady from the movie Rock and Roll High School, can't remember her name off the top of my head, but the main character from there, and also the girl who played, the lady who played Dottie in the original, and Pee-wee's Big Adventure is a hooker in this one, so it's pretty good. Oh, and Michael Berryman. I love Michael Berryman. That's it. Just wanted to say, have a wonderful evening, afternoon, morning, whatever you guys are recording this. Goodbye.
Whatever time plane you guys are on.
Well, thank you, Matthew, for calling in. Yeah, you know, I think we've all can agree that Devil's Rejects is probably Rob Zombie's best movie.
Certainly.
I would say that, yes.
So, yeah, I mean, as we talked about last week when we were talking about the Lords of Salem, or was that the week before? I don't know. I don't know how psyched we can get about Rob Zombie. It's film career anymore, but you know, we might get around to Devil's Rejects at some point on the show. Although if we're going to be doing movies with Terry Reid on the soundtrack, I would rather do Wonderland, that movie about John Holmes.
Oh, that scene where they club everybody to death is fucked up.
Yeah, that's a crazy movie.
That is a dark film.
Yeah.
Ugh, sound in that.
We should do a theme show of movies about celebrities that were involved in gruesome murders. Because Autofocus is also a sweet movie.
It's there you go.
Bob Crane, he was involved in gruesome murders.
Mm-hmm.
And then
we
also
already did the Manson family movie.
Yeah. We could do that movie where a John Ritter movie. He was involved in gruesome murders, right?
How dare you.
What if we did that Sergeant Pepper movie? Isn't Eric Clapton in that? He killed his kid.
Oh, come on.
Too soon.
What? Oh, yeah. My bad, you guys.
What, are we doing jokes now about dead children?
Come on. He's got tears in heaven, for God's sake.
Mm-hmm.
All right. The last piece of junk mail we got is from everyone's favorite, StarFan666. I'm going to let Parker take this one. He's better at phonetic reading.
I like to emphasize the way that it's written. In the telling. In the dramatic retelling. Hello, this is Corey, a.k.a. SawFan, at SawFan666, from the Imtranet, your old friend, Remember Me. I just wanted to say thank you for doing a whole shoe, a bot Frankenstein's. Just for me. It was pretty cool, and I want to make my own Frankenhooker someday out of lady parts. Please tell any of your lady fans to be my friend on Twitter if they want to be a part of my Frankenhooker. Or Mabe if they just want me to smell their hair. Sninnyway, now I'm real sorry. Now I'm real sorry I draw that picture of you guys and made Mark have a penis for a nose. LOL.
Yeah, thank you.
If I knew you would do a Frankensteins episode, I wouldn't have did that. Oh yeah, I have an idea for another Halloween episode where you maybe do some movies that all have to do with people who use traps to kill people. I was thinking you could do Saw 1, 2... I was thinking you could do Saw 1, 2, and 3, or maybe even Saw 4, 5, and 6. I think people would like that. Okay, I have to go. What do you think I do? Write emails to podcasts every day? LOL. My name is Corey. You can be my friend on Twitter at SawFan666. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you, Corey.
Corey. Apology accepted.
Yeah. Thanks for writing in, and everybody, yeah, go follow SawFan666 on Twitter. It's the only reason to have a Twitter account as far as I'm concerned.
You don't even have one, poser.
Yeah, we've been at tagging some guy who's not even you.
Yeah. Kevin Two-Trill. That was what I decided your Twitter name would be.
Pretty close.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Number two.
I still read his post. I don't have to have a Twitter account to read the post.
That's true.
But also, yeah, if you've been if you've been on the fence about Twitter like me, go check out SoftFan666. He might make you a believer. Not me, but you might be more easily convinced.
Yeah.
All right, cool. So if you'd like to get involved in the conversation, please send us an email at jfdpodcast@gmail.com, or even better, leave us a voicemail on our voicemail line at 347-746-JUNK. That's 347-746-5865. All right, let's get into some nerd news.
From the global resources of Junk Food Dinner Worldwide, it's time for Nerd News.
The first piece of nerd news that I have, a sad piece of nerd news. Actor and former NFL star Alex Karras dies at the age of 77. Former Detroit Lions defensive tackle turned actor in the ABC sitcom Webster, as well as the classic 1974 movie Blazing Saddles, passed away at his home following a battle with kidney disease, heart disease, dementia, and stomach cancer. Wow, talk about taking it from all ends. So sad to hear, you know, 77 years old. He had a good life for a guy that spent most of his early days getting knocked around on the football field, but it sounds like his body caught up to him in the end. But still, I will always remember him as George Papadopoulos on Webster. I loved that show as a kid, and, you know, he was a big, lovable oaf. And, of course, Blazing Saddles is excellent. I wasn't, like, you know, shocked to hear this news. It's not like it was crazy, but still sad to hear. Were you guys Alex Karras fans?
I wasn't not a fan. I don't have any beef with him.
You didn't have the Alex Karras poster up in your room as a youth?
No, I didn't.
Ah.
Sorry.
Yeah, he seems all right. I just recently learned that he was that dude from Blazing Saddles. So that blew my mind. I thought he was just that old man who took care of Webster.
Yeah. Well, here's another thing that might blow your mind. His wife on Webster, his real-life wife.
That does blow my mind.
Yeah.
If I ever met her, I would call her ma'am.
You'd have to.
The next piece of nerd news is, it's hard to even call this news. It's rumblings. As you guys know, and probably the listeners at this point, I am a big fan of viral marketing. I think it's super fun, and it's a cool way to get your stuff out there. I mean, obviously not all of it, but you know, a good deal of the time. I think it's really fun. I got real into Cloverfield and all that stuff, so... on Slash Film, the editor, Peter, says, "Tonight I received a mysterious message on my cell phone along with an equally mysterious attached video. At first I thought this might be footage from a new viral movie campaign, but I couldn't think of any movie being released this year that might fit. Blah, 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 blah. The text was all in Portuguese. He translated it, and it says, 'This was discovered to 16... I'm just going to read this. It's like a Saw fan email. This was discovered 16 weeks ago on a camera phone that was found in a plastic bag with zipper. It was discovered in the Amazon River. Brazilian officials have not released any information about the phone owner. However, widely believed to be the phone of Sarah Molina, a native of Torrance, California. Miss Molina headlines when she was disappeared during his work with Doctors Without Borders. Okay. In the area, Oriximina, in the last month. 2 weeks after the first reports of her disappearance, she was discovered by a local worker of a factory of wood nearby. She was found unconscious and remained in a coma ever since. His family has not confirmed that the phone was hers, and the only image appears to be a video of an amphibious creature dead. These images are now starting to appear online." And then there's a little video, it's like 4 seconds, of a creature kind of flopping around and stuff. So, pretty cool, I think. I mean... Monster movie, cool viral campaign. I'm excited to see where this goes. I hope it doesn't end up being something stupid, but what do you guys think? You like that viral stuff?
Yeah, I think it can be fun if done right. A lot of times it just seems kind of hokey and...
Yeah, for sure.
But, yeah, I mean, yeah, I think it's a fun, like, it's kind of like the new millennium way of, like, huckstering, you know what I mean? Like,
mm-hmm, for sure.
I feel like if William Castle were alive today, he'd be doing some sweet viral promotion.
Yeah. Did you see the Monster University viral website? thingy?
I did. I saw that. I thought that was cool.
Yeah, that's very cute.
Yeah. Yeah, and same thing, like last week I talked about the Wreck-It Ralph kind of advertisements, and like, you know, Pixar's always do like the Huggins Bear commercials in Japanese and stuff, and I mean, I like that kind of like little detail stuff, and I think it, you know, expands the universe and just kind of, you know, fluffs it up a little.
Yeah. Speaking of Wreck-It Ralph and viral marketing, I thought this was pretty cool. They made 20 old-school arcade machines that featured that game and sent them out into the world, and one of them's at a local arcade here in Cincinnati.
Oh, that one?
Yeah.
That's sweet. Have you played it?
No, it's only here for 2 days, tonight and tomorrow. Oh. I'm podcasting both days.
That's rough.
Yeah. But yeah, I thought that was a cool kind of viral marketing.
That's awesome.
Yeah, going back to Pixar and Toy Story 3, and I said this before, but I'll say it again because I think it's worth mentioning multiple times, but that Huggins Bear was a fucking dickhead.
Oh yeah, he was a jerk.
That guy was a real asshole.
Really holding a beef against this cartoon bear.
Yeah, man.
Hey, did you see, this is totally off topic now, but it's Pixar. Did you see the video of that kid who re-edited the end of Toy Story 3 so they all just die, and then it cuts to the credits, and then he shows it to his mom?
No, I didn't.
It's like 8 minutes long, and it's pretty funny, because the next day she's like still talking about it. Because like they're like talking at the breakfast table, and someone else there had seen it, and she was like, well, how about that ending? And he was like, yeah, it's fine. You know, like, and then she's like, it's not fine, they all die! Like, they didn't have to kill them! And everybody's like, what are you talking about? It's pretty funny.
Yeah, that's probably how that movie should have ended.
Yeah.
It'd be way sadder.
Yeah, where they just, like, accept the fact that they're gonna die, and then they fall on the fire, and then the credits start.
Yeah, because, I mean, more realistically, that's what happens with toys after their run. They die. Yeah.
Just like humans.
That's true. And then you ask yourself, who are the real toys?
Mm-hmm. I feel like we're going to be doing that a lot tonight.
That's true. But in more sad news, perhaps the saddest of news, and I'll pose this question to you, Mark. What do you think the saddest possible thing that could be rebooted could be?
Oh, God.
Because it's happening.
Jesus, that's rough. I don't know what. Just tell me, because I have like a whole bunch of stuff in my brain.
Well, they're working on a movie called The Son of Ernest, where they're rebooting the Ernest saga.
Oh my God. With hologram Jim Varney.
Hologram Jim Varney. Now I guess they're doing the Ace Ventura thing where. When either Jim Varney is too dead or Jim Carrey is too rich, you just bring in some stupid ass little kid. And
oh no!
And it's really gonna like put like a real weird spin on the previous movies, because at no point did Ernest like acknowledge having a kid or anything. So now,
well, plus, I mean, he only hung out with kids, so yeah. Logically, that in this much time passing, I guess. One of those kids could have had and raised his kid. Also, yeah. is this Ernest also going to have to, you know, move from town to town, getting different jobs, and is he only going to hang out with, like, adults?
Yeah, I guess now it'll make more sense for this Ernest to hang out with other kids. But, I mean, part of the charm of Ernest was that he always had some wacky job that got him into these troubles. I mean, he was like a janitor at the local college, and then that's how he got involved with basketball, and he was like a garbage man, and that's somehow he got involved with trolls and stuff.
Sure.
What's this little kid going to do?
Bank? Wasn't he also a janitor at a bank? Always custodial work.
Yeah.
Now he's a cab driver and saves Christmas.
Yeah.
Mm.
But he cleaned toilets in the camp movie. But yeah, so I don't know what this kid's going to do for work.
Yeah, I think it's, yeah, like you just hang out in kids' bathrooms all day at a camp, Ernest.
Hopefully yeah. We'll finally get that backstory of how he met Vern.
Hopefully.
Wait, is it supposed to be Ernest's kid or Ernest as a kid?
Oh, no, I'm sorry, I'm confused. It's
no, I'm confused. What is
the
it?
Son of Ernest.
Yeah. Oh,
son of an Ernest.
According to some dude involved who's writing it and producing it, Ernest was this plucky little engine that could, against all odds.
Ugh.
Ernest struck a nerve, one that we're going to revisit. We plan to honor the originals and Jim Varney while birthing, a pun, a new chapter that lies somewhere between not sucking and earth-shatteringly funny, and I bet it's going to be closer to the sucking pun.
Wait, is that in the quote?
Yeah.
Not sucking.
What kind of design of drug are you on?
Yeah, that's the actual quote.
Ugh.
And he's also apparently writing a movie called Dear Satan. Who
the balls on this guy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Dear Satan is where he struck that deal to get this movie made.
Dear Satan, or How I Get to Make Movies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For real.
This is a bummer. The one thing that Jim Varney had going in his life was how much people loved him through this, and these guys are just going to take it away from him.
Yeah, and give it to some little sack of shit kid.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is terrible news.
Jim Varney, rest in peace.
Mm-hmm. In more reboot news, did you guys see the Evil Dead trailer that appeared online this week? So I guess the first teaser trailer dropped at the New York City Comic-Con, which, Mark, why weren't you there, man?
I really wanted to go.
I sent you that Deadpool costume.
Yeah, I know. Well,
you're supposed to be our man on the scene.
Yeah, I mean, I'm wearing the Deadpool costume every day, but not at Comic-Con. No, someday I'll get to go to Comic-Con. It also, the thing is, I was like, oh yeah, I should go to Comic-Con. It'll be sweet. And then I like actually think about it, and I'm like, no, it'll be expensive and crowded, and you're probably gonna get hit with some big like cardboard sledgehammer or something. And like, I don't know.
Yeah. Well, at Comic-Con, they premiered the very first teaser trailer of the new Evil Dead remake, and of course, some dude was there with a cell phone to capture it and put it online. So now it's going all over the internet. So it's a little shaky, a little blurry, but you get a good...
That's out of fear, I imagine.
You get a kind of a good sense of what this remake's all about. You know, for months we've been speculating on what the remake's going to be. Stars have dropped in and out. Now it's pretty much got no stars. But, you know, when the first one came out, it didn't exactly have a bevy of who's who A-listers, so not going to hold that against it. After watching this trailer, I don't know. I'm kind of split. Like, on one hand, it's an Evil Dead remake, and it's got young, good-looking kids in it, and that is a bummer. But on the other hand, some of the things that this does have in its favor, there's no CGI in the movie whatsoever. Everything is practical effects, which is cool, and some of the practical effects in this trailer look fucking awesome. The tree rape is in full effect, and you get to see a little bit of that in the trailer. And I don't know. I think it looks like it could be pretty cool, but just by virtue of the fact that it's an Evil Dead remake, it's already coming in the race with one strike against it. But I don't know. I want to be psyched for this, so we'll have to wait and see till the full trailer comes out. But chances are, I'll probably go see this.
Yeah, I'm absolutely going to see it no matter what. I've been torn for a while. At first I was kind of into it because Bruce Campbell was very into it, but then I like got kind of torn about that because he's like also paid to be into it because he's producing it.
Yeah.
So then I was like kind of torn, and then I was downright against it because of Diablo Cody doing a rewrite. And not because I hate her, because I think young adult's really good, but I hate her doing horror because Jennifer's Body is one of the worst things. So then I was kind of torn again and pretty against it, and then seeing this trailer, I'm pretty into it because it looks scary, and it looks super scary, man. Also, the girl from Suburgatory, which is a funny show, is in it, and one of the dudes who's in a couple episodes of the show Girls, which I like a lot, is in it. So there's competent people in it, even though nobody knows who they are.
You guys know what I think of this.
He likes this lot.
No, I mean, yeah, I like this a lot.
I like this a lot.
Well, what did you think of the trailer objectively?
Okay, so like Kevin said, out of the gate, I'm predisposed to not be into this, because it's an Evil Dead remake. That being said, there was some cool looking stuff in the trailer, and I like that it's all practical effects. I am going to try really hard to see this for free. But I also kind of want to reserve saying anything until I can see a non-cell phone cam version of this trailer. But, I mean, on the whole, like, why didn't they just funnel all of this money into making, and, like, practical effects work into making a cool new horror movie with a bunch of nobodies?
Yeah, I mean, I agree, but...
You know what I mean? Like, there is some cool-looking stuff. There's also some really shitty-looking stuff. Like all the shots of, like, just them walking through the cabin and stuff. You know, it just looks like that... You know what it looks like? It looks like the Texas Chainsaw Massacre remake, which is... I'm afraid that it's going to be. Is it's going to be one of these new, you know, like, super, super brutal remakes of these movies, but they just look like super slick and like way too dark and saturated, and it just looks like shit. So I want to see this outside of a cell phone, and you know, I think that still of the Basement Girl looks pretty bad.
I think that looks scary. I was scared by it.
Yes. Yeah, so check out this trailer while it's still online. A lot of places are taking it down. Yeah, I'm sure they want to, you know, release the real deal here soon, so it'll be up eventually. So yeah, keep your eyes peeled for that. I mean, I think the whole thing about this is, rather than doing like a new movie, and I think this is perfectly encapsulated on the cell phone footage, is like when the Evil Dead logo comes up on the screen, the crowd goes nuts. And if this was just the same trailer, but it was called, you know, Scary Woods Movie,
Spooky Woods,
yeah, you wouldn't get that same response. And that's what they're paying for, the name recognition. And
I would cheer pretty loud for Spooky Woods Movie if that was an actual title card that came up. But look, I mean, like, even though I'm occasionally a hater, you know, the idea that this is supposed to be like pretty faithful and is all practical and stuff, like, I will probably see this. But I'm not expecting anything good to come from it.
Well, yeah. But we can see.
Yeah. Do you guys think that the fact that Cabin in the Woods came out and deconstructs and sort of is a parody of this entire movie is going to help or hurt or have no impact on the way that people view this movie?
I say have no impact. I think this would be received the same, pretty much the same, regardless.
Well, I don't know. I think that maybe, especially younger people who have not, you know, grown up seeing Evil Dead, Evil Dead 2, and Army of Darkness a million times, and who are super into Cabin in the Woods, you know what I, like, I think that that audience, that it might hinder this movie for them. I think that Cabin in the Woods could be a hindrance in that aspect, but
yeah.
I don't know.
I think if kids who, like you said, haven't seen the originals and stuff, go to see this after liking Cabin in the Woods, like when they pull out the book and start reading from it, people might go, what the fuck is this? They're ripping off Cabin in the Woods. Or you know, they're falling right into these traps that have just been, you know, blown up. You know, these tropes and stuff that have been debunked. I think it might hurt.
Yeah, that's interesting. I don't know. If you haven't seen the original, you know, Evil Dead movies, but have seen Cabin in the Woods, I don't know. It that just seems weird to me, but I'm sure it's possible.
Yeah.
Only time will tell.
Yeah.
Also, out of the New York Comic Con comes news of Garth Ennis and his endeavor to write and direct a live-action movie based on his comic Crossed. Crossed is, I guess it's easy to call it a zombie story, but it's about a virus that gets into people, and it doesn't turn them undead or anything, and it doesn't really turn them into cannibals specifically, but it makes people lose all their inhibitions. And
ghouls.
They turn into ghouls.
It's it might be pretty easy to call this a zombie comic. It's extremely easy to call this just disgusting.
Yeah. So while they do lose their inhibitions and start eating people, there's also a lot of rape. There's also people, you know, just mindlessly killing themselves, just doing crazy violent things. You know,
so much rape.
Yeah, blowing stuff up, doing all kinds of crazy stuff. And
now that wasn't so bad, was it?
It was disgusting.
So I really like Garth Ennis's run on these comics. The other guy who took over kind of stinks. But with Garth Ennis doing it, there's, you know, a lot of cool symbolism. And, you know, the whole thing's kind of a metaphor for this crazy life we lead where people are turning into ghouls left and right and how uncivilized people are. And I think this could be cool. It's, as at least I saw from the movie The Spirit, dudes who make comic books are not necessarily good at making movies. As Frank Miller really sucked that one up. But so this could be bad, real bad. But if anybody's going to do it, I think Garth Ennis is cool enough to be able to make a movie because he's fucking great.
Yeah, Garth Ennis is really cool. I like Preacher. I like what he did with The Punisher. I even like The Boys, what I've read of that, which I thought was cool. So yeah, this I read the first like 10 issues of Crossed, and yeah, it's pretty disturbing. And you had mentioned before the show, it's going to be interesting to see what they're able to get away with and still get an R rating. So that'll be interesting to see how they play that. So, I have faith in Ennis. I think he's got a good movie in him, but we shall see. All right, well, let's get into some cool stuff on DVD and Blu-ray this week. The first release that I have is Terror Train from 1980 in a nice Blu-ray-DVD combo, collector's edition. This is, again, from the fine people at Scream Factory, the horror division of Shout Factory, who have been releasing a lot of really cool shit as of late. They just released the two Halloween movies with cool new commissioned artwork and lots of bonus features, and this is another one like that. This also stars Jamie Lee Curtis. Have you guys ever seen Terror Train before?
You know, I saw this and I really liked the music video they put in the middle of it. And I liked the God and the Devil playing chess and all that.
No, that was Night Train to Terror.
Oh, then no.
Yeah, maybe we can do this movie for New Year's Eve, because it takes place on New Year's Eve. A group of college co-eds have planned a masquerade bash aboard a chartered train. What they didn't plan on was that a knife-wielding psycho would crash the party and begin slaughtering the guests one by one. Who is this brutal costume killer? Could it be the mysterious magician, played by David Copperfield himself, with a talent for swordplay, a former frat pledge with an axe to grind, or any number of other guests, both invited and uninvited? So yeah, I have not seen this, but it's one that I've been wanting to see for a while. Now that it's got this nice cleaned up Blu-ray DVD, it's probably the time to see it. Jamie Lee Curtis, you know, in a horror movie, usually indicates that it's going to be pretty good, unless you're talking Halloween H2O. But 1980, probably pretty good. It's got some cool cover art. And, yeah, I think now's the time to check it out.
Yeah, that sounds all right.
Yeah, I like that, Jamie Lee Curtis. Up next, I have the Funhouse Collector's Edition. This is a Tobe Hooper movie that I've never seen, but I almost bought it the other day because it's in one of these four packs that also has Phantasm 2. So I was very enticed. But then I didn't buy it because I'm a jerk. But I don't know. How do you guys feel about this movie? I've never seen it. What do you guys know about this?
It's fun. There's a two-headed cow.
I like that. One time at the Virginia State Fair, I saw a cow with six legs.
What?
It was nuts.
Yeah, I have seen this movie. This is good. I mean, it's one of those, you know, creepy carnival movies a la Ghoulies 2. Which I also love. And, of course, Tobe Hooper at the helm. You know, not saying he's done everything he's done is good, but this is, as the title would imply, a fun one. And Rick Baker did the special effects in it, so that's always nice. A good sign.
That's good.
But yeah, this is good. And like Terror Train, it's, you know, another nice cleaned-up transfer from Shout Factory, so... I'm sure it'll be pretty sweet.
In a similar vein to both of those, I have Moonrise Kingdom from this year by Wes Anderson, about two kids who fall in love, and they run away together. They are also autistic. This movie takes place on an island, and as such, Wes Anderson really just gets to turn his shit up to 11, because there is no outside world. It's all just Wes Anderson Island. Tilda Swinton, Jason Schwartzman, Bob Balaban, Bruce Willis, Bill Murray, who else? Francis McDormand, Edward Norton, and a bunch of kids. I saw this in the theater during a marathon day of movie watching. I saw Prometheus, this, and Dark Knight Rises. And this was probably the most enjoyable thing that I saw that day. It's very colorful. Like, you know, it's everything you expect from a Wes Anderson movie. Some good tunes, some sad adults, some kids, a lot of animal costumes, tiny record players. Very precocious. Some shots of hands. did you guys see this?
Yeah, I saw it. And you're just certainly not selling this to anyone outside the hipster community.
I mean, if you like Wes Anderson, you already saw this. If you don't, then you are never going to see it. So, I mean, I don't need to sell this to anyone. Wes Anderson doesn't need help selling his movies.
No, I know. but yeah, no, I thought this was good too. I like Wes Anderson. I know he's a pretty big target for people that don't like him. Mm-hmm. But no, he's a good filmmaker. I thought this was a good movie, and yeah, I thought it was entertaining.
I haven't seen it.
It's a little much points, but what isn't?
I like those Tenenbaums, and I love those Life Aquatics, but every time one of his movies come out now, like, I just have no interest. Like, which, I mean, doesn't make sense, because, you know, I like those two right in a row, but now, for, you know, I don't know, I think it's just one of those things where you just kind of, like how sometimes when, like, dudes turn 23, they just stop listening to pop punk. I think it's one of those things. Like, you just kind of lose it one day. You're just not there anymore.
But you didn't do that.
Not with pop punk. Heavens no. Heavens no. But other dudes sometimes do that.
Oh, okay. There you go.
The next DVD release that I have is You Can't Do That on Film. What happens when you travel to the birthplace of green slime for an entire generation of classic Nickelodeon fans? It's like finding the Holy Grail. Join filmmaker David Dielhunt for You Can't Do That on Film, the first and only feature-length documentary about the cult classic children's television show You Can't Do That on Television. This revolutionary program broke all the rules, like Kids Be Kids, and taught viewers everywhere where... to avoid the phrase, I don't know. Packed with more slime, more laughs, and more fun, You Can't Do That on Film includes interviews with nearly 24 original cast and crew members, including Les Lee, Christine McGlade, Alistair Gillis, Adam Reed, and, of course, Alanis Morissette. So, yeah, this is exciting. I love You Can't Do That on Television. As a kid, that was, like, my favorite TV show. I always... Recently, a few episodes have popped up here online, but I've always been waiting for them to release it on DVD. Never happened. So until we wait for that, this is a good little tidbit to tide us over. I'm excited to see what's going on. I know Leslie, the guy that was the adult on the show, all male adult characters, passed away recently, which I was sad to hear. But I'm excited that they got some interviews from him and everyone else involved. So I think this should be interesting. I'll have to check this out. Did you guys watch You Can't Do That on Television?
Heavens, yes. But when I Absolutely. Turned 23, I just stopped watching it altogether. yeah, and I was actually watching some YouTube clips of this the other day. It's crazy good. It's still kind of funny in a very weird way.
Of course it is. They pop out of lockers to tell jokes.
Yeah, and that dude who runs that restaurant, he's got all kinds of cockroaches and, like, dead people and stuff.
He's so greasy.
He's a gross person.
Yeah, no, this is great. I mean, I love slime. I like jokes. Canada's fine. Like, what, you know, what's not to like about this?
Yeah, I watched the trailer for this, and I forget who it was. One of the old cast members said that You Can't Do That on Television, surprisingly, way more popular, like, in the United States than it was in Canada, despite being a Canadian-grown series. Like, Kids in Canada liked it all right, but Kids in America loved it.
Went bad shit for it.
Yeah.
We love slime here. And water.
Yeah, that's true. We're over the moon for it.
Yeah. One thing I don't like about this show is that it tried to indoctrinate me on liking Monty Python, and it failed miserably, but it tried. It tried so hard.
Yeah, really did.
The next thing I have, as this was a pretty slow week, I thought, is Chappelle's show, The Complete Series. This is a DVD set that's been out, you know, you can get season 1 and season 2 and season 2.5 and the best of all these seasons and other such collections of this, but I think this is the first time it's been all together in one piece. This is one of the best shows ever, I think. I think it's crazy that 10 years later, people still quote it like it just came on last week. I think this is probably the last decade's defining piece of comedy. And it's crazy because it was only on for 2 years. And I think Chappelle is a genius and I love him. And everybody should buy this.
Yeah, I mean, I'll agree with that. It was an awesome, awesome sketch comedy show. Loved it. I think everybody our age watched the shit out of it, knows every sketch, quotes it all the time. So, yeah, I mean, this is another one that doesn't really need to be sold to anybody.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think I know anybody who doesn't like Chappelle's. I don't think I've ever met anybody who's like, eh, it's okay.
Yeah.
Who wasn't at one point in tears from laughing so hard.
Yeah.
It's good stuff.
The Three Daves. The last DVD that I have is another real piece of crap, and that is Night of the Living Dead 3D Reanimation. This came out a few years ago. I saw it at Studio 35, so I was still living in Columbus. And I went to this because I thought that it was actual Night of the Living Dead in 3D and not this new pile of garbage. And Jeffrey Combs, sadly, was in this. This sucks. The 3D looks fine, I guess, in the theater. Somebody passes you a joint in 3D. There's like a pitchfork that comes out of the screen or something. It's just, it's really, really bad. It's a really terrible movie. But I picked it just to share that story about how I mistakenly saw it. And also because in one of these Amazon reviews, they used the phrase, sucks out loud, which I think is really funny.
So is this animated? This is the one that they animated the original Night of the Living Dead?
No. This is a new one about a funeral, like a mortuary worker or something that, like, you know, reanimates a whole cemetery full of people and they attack a house. But no, that thing that you're talking about was that, like, fan-sourced project where everybody got to animate, like, segments of the movie. I think that sounds amazing. I still haven't seen that, but I always thought that was a cool project. But yeah. No, this is just it's a new movie called Night of the Living Dead 3D, and it's awful.
And this is different from that Night of the Living Dead 3D with Sid Haig.
No, this is the same one.
Oh. And it's just coming out again for some reason?
Yeah.
Oh. Well, that's weird.
It is weird.
But going back to that animated one, my friend Julie's husband did a piece for that, so I've been wanting to see it for a long time.
Oh, cool.
He did one of the claymation ones. Segments.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought that was a really cool project.
Yeah, it sounds cool. People on Amazon hate it, though. I was looking at it just a couple of weeks ago because me and Julie were talking about it, and it gets a lot of bad reviews. But I think that's from people who think it's an actual movie or something. Like, from people who bought it thinking it was just Night of the Living Dead.
Yeah. The last release that I have is Gone in 60 Seconds on Blu-ray. This is the original 1974 HB Halicki version. The description says, "You've seen all the Chase films. Now see the one that started it all. The runaway theatrical hit in 1974, Gone in 60 Seconds, defined the genre of car chase films and became an instant classic among action movie fans. Buckle up as master car thief Pace and Eleanor slams through five cities, cop after cop, can't touch them, wrecking over 93 cars in a spectacular 40-minute chase scene, making their escape. It's full throttle. It's a full throttle rocket ride you'll never forget." So yeah, this is great. You know, a lot of people probably only remember the Nicolas Cage Gone in 60 Seconds, which tarnished the name probably for our entire generation. So you might be hesitant to pick this up, but the 1974 version is really great. As the description mentions, lots of cars crashing, super long chase scene. If you like, you know, things like Bullet and French Connection and classic car chase movies, this is definitely right up there. And it's, you know, got a 70s kind of grindhouse exploitation feel to it as well. So yeah, now that it's out on Blu-ray, good time to pick it up and check it out. Have you guys seen the original Gone in 60 Seconds?
I have not.
Me neither. I haven't seen either one of them.
Ah, it's fun. I would definitely recommend checking it out.
Well, I went to the store to buy this, you know, and it wasn't there. I said, hey, what's the deal here? A guy who works at the store, I tried to buy this movie.
No, don't do it.
And he said, oh, we had it, but it was gone in 60 seconds. They came in, they bought it. So many people bought it. We sold out in a little under a minute there. And now we don't have any more copies, but if you give me your name and number, I can order you another copy, and we can call you when it comes in.
You're out of here.
Turn off my mic.
Apparently, I'm reading more reviews of this, Night of the Living Dead 3D. This is a prelude to the one that came out in 2007.
So this is a prequel.
Different movie.
It's a prequel.
A prequel to a movie that came out 3 years ago in a franchise that doesn't need either. I just don't get it. I might just cut this entire segment. Just doesn't make any sense to me.
Hmm.
This is a prelude to the Night of the Living Dead 3D DVD movie starring Sid Haig. What? But it's the same director.
I guess he liked the material so much he wanted to direct both.
Just dipping back into that well.
Mm-hmm. That lucrative Night of the Living Dead remake well.
Yeah, God. It's no shortage of well stuff in there. I think we're done here.
Yeah. All right, well, that just about wraps up the DVDs this week. We are going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we are going to get into our first killer doll movie of the evening, Black Devil Doll from Hell from 1984, so stick around.
Junk Food Dinner is the number one cult movie podcast among really awesome cool people. Do you know it? We know it. Now we need iTunes to know it. Search iTunes for Junk Food Dinner. Then leave us a review telling the world how much you like the show. Cap it off with a nice 5-star rating. Then subscribe to our show to get the newest episodes as soon as possible. If everyone does that, we'll take the iTunes world by storm, gaining new listeners. If no one does that, Kevin, Mark, and Parker will die homeless and riddled with disease.
Well, all I want is a party doll to come along with me when I'm feeling wild, to be ever lovable, true and fair, to run my fingers through my hair. Come along with me, my party doll. Come along with me, my party doll. Come along with me, my party doll. I'll make love to you. Well, I saw a gal walking down the street, the kind of a gal I love to meet. She had blonde hair and eyes of blue. Oh, baby, I wanna have a party with you. Come along and be my party doll. Come along and be my party doll. Come along and be my party doll. All they love
to you. Bitch! I said wake up, bitch! Wake up!
Please let me go. No, don't pull us away.
Welcome back to Junk Food Dinner, episode 131. This is the third week of Schlocktober, and this week we're taking a look at killer doll movies. And to jumpstart the show, the first film we're going to be talking about is Black Devil Doll from Hell, from 1984. This was directed by Chester Turner, and he would later go on to direct Tales from the Quad Dead Zone, which also starred Shirley L. Jones, and then completely disappear forever, and no one will ever see him again. Black Devil Doll from Hell, like Quad Dead, is shot on video, and features a lot of the same music as Tales from the Quad Dead Zone. The movie is about a young lady named Helen Black, who is a God-fearing, a Bible-thumping woman who, deep within her loins, is expressing a carnal desire. She's trying to bang. So she goes to a magic shop and buys a doll. This puppet has returned to the store four times, and it always, you know, grants your deepest desire. So she takes this puppet home. She puts it on the toilet. She wraps its arms up to make it look darker, and then just has sex with it for the rest of the movie. this film is 70 minutes long. The only person in the film with a name in their credit is Shirley Jones. Everyone else is a church member or church friend. This is incredibly hard to find on VHS. It's in its entirety on YouTube, and, you know, honestly, it's going to look about the same if you did find a $100 VHS of it. Not surprisingly, I hold a special place in my heart for this A Dead Zone. It's just two of the craziest movies I've ever seen in my life. If they're shot on video, which I... Quad Dead Zone, I like considerably more than this, but this was still a real treat. Prior to seeing this, or watching this for the show, the only time I had seen this was was on the big screen at Spectacle as a horror movie midnight. And it was a truly, truly mind-blowing experience with a theater full of people, all of whom were very disgusted. I'm going to tempt fate and ask what you guys thought of Black Devil Doll from Hell.
Well, like you, the first time I saw this movie was on the big screen. I saw this as part of a marathon called Pay to Get Out Alive, where they intentionally played the worst movies possible, and for every hour that you stayed, you got a dollar back on your admission to get into the film festival. So it was. I thought that was a really cool idea, and seeing this with a whole crowd of people was a fun experience, because, you know, it is so bad. I mean, when we're talking about this movie, we're talking about you know, Blood Lake, Things, you know, that type of bad, like shot on video, just absolutely no sense of editing whatsoever. The music is just a drum machine that's just over and over again. The sound levels are way out of yeah, just the sound mixing is non-existent. The acting is unbelievably bad. And it's just, you have to wonder how a group of people assembled to make this just pile of garbage. Now, this movie, unlike
this puppet,
unlike Blood Lake, this has a very special thing going for it that I think redeems all the shittiness, and that is the what the fuck factor. And, you know, when it comes to movies like this, and this is what made Blood Lake so unforgivable, is it didn't have the what the fuck factor, where this is, if you're watching this with a group of people or even just a couple of friends, you're constantly looking at each other just going, what the fuck? What the fuck is it? What? Are you fucking kidding now? This? And you can't believe what you're seeing, because it's just so fucking strange. I mean, this lady, you know, this church-going lady having sex with this puppet, and just it's just so ridiculous. This movie, though, there is some just fucking unbearable shit in it. Like, there's this conversation that she has with one of her friends where she's on the phone talking to her friend, and they decide just, you know, let's pan around the kitchen and zoom in on random shit. And instead, and let's get the whole conversation, this whole 5-minute conversation that's apropos to nothing about her friend, you know, trying to get her laid. This could have been summed up in about 30 seconds. But no, let's have a whole 5-minute conversation. Let's not put the camera on her. Let's just zoom around the room, focus in on the sink, focus in on a window, focus in on just random shit. It seems like this was made by people that literally had no idea not only how to make a movie, but just what a movie was. It's like they had never seen a movie.
To be fair, though, what you do when you're on the phone, you just, like, wander around the kitchen, especially when you had a landline in your kitchen, you just, like, wander around, like, looking at the sink.
Yeah, but it's not, you know, like, I mean? It's not like from her point of view. It's
your point of view.
But yeah.
You're there with her.
To my point, that this movie, it looks like it's not only made by people that have never made a movie before, but have never seen a movie before. And it's unbelievably bad. But like I said, unlike some other bad movies that we watched on the show, it does have an excellent what-the-fuck factor. And so for that reason alone, I would say watch this. But only if you are with a group of people. Like, if you try to sit down and watch this by yourself, you're going to have a bad time. But if you can get a group of buddies together and get kind of wasted and just kind of goof on this, it's a fun one for that purpose.
Yeah, I watched this by myself on a Friday night. And the first thing you notice about this... The first thing you notice about this film is that it's got, like, the public access credits, where it's, like, a blue screen, and then it's, like, you know, written on in the white block letters. And those last for 7 minutes.
Yeah, 7 whole minutes.
Of
with
shit.
This.
Of a 70-minute movie.
Yeah. And in a movie
one
where...
One-tenth of this.
Yeah, in a movie where there's only one actor. In the whole actor in quotation marks. There's one person in this movie. You got one person, one puppeteer, one person holding the camera. How the fuck does it take 7 minutes to get through those credits? I'll never know. They could have used one title screen.
Yeah, and every name gets like 45 seconds of screen time.
Yeah, they leave them up for a long time. Like, they're real insistent that you read every name.
5 times.
Yeah. Ugh. The shower scene where this lady is, like, touching herself, you know, like you guys said, like, the sound is, like, real awful, but they just hold down one key for that entire scene. It's unbearable. It's what a dog must hear when you, like, just blow into a dog whistle, unmerciful, for as long as you can. So that was real bad. This movie marks the start of Indian Ghoul Summer, as we're in October, but Ghoul Summer is still fully in swing, as most of this movie is rape.
No, she loves it.
Yeah, well, she starts out hating it, and then she learns to love it. I read that the original name for this movie was Straw Dolls.
That's a good joke.
That is a good joke.
Thanks.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah, so, and I mean, that's a whole lot of this movie. It's just those rape scenes over and over, and then she loves it. This movie's terrible for all the reasons you guys mentioned, but it does, like Kevin said, it does have that what-the-fuck factor where I feel like before these guys made this movie, they were like, hey, we should make a movie. What should we do? To whereas in something like Blood Lake, I don't think that happened. Like, I think they were just at the lake, and they're like, hey, real quick, let's make a movie. So I respect them for at least, I assume, thinking about this movie beforehand, rather than just picking up a camera, filming some bullshit, and calling it a movie. Mm-hmm. You think the people who made Blood Lake put a lot of forethought into it?
Agree to disagree.
Or is it that you disagree that these people put forethought into it?
Oh, that's a good question. I think... I guess these people probably thought more about their film than people who made Blood Lake.
Yeah.
I'll give you that.
I don't know. It's awful. It's, like, made terribly. And it's also morally deplorable, the fact that it's just about rape. And how, if you do it for long enough, a girl will really like you.
See, I don't know if it's about rape. And
the whole thing is rape! It's like that scene goes on for like a half an hour.
But what I'm saying is, I think this movie is...
No, it grants her desire, dude.
Yeah, I think this movie is about her repressed sexuality.
Yeah.
And I didn't get the rapey vibe too bad. Because she clearly is into this. And to the point where she's like in love with the puppet and real men don't even satisfy her.
Yeah, but she only realizes she's in love with the puppet after he's so good at raping her that she has no choice but to be in love with him.
Yeah, either way you slice it, it's weird. I mean, let's not split hairs over this. But yeah, I don't know. Have you guys seen the semi-remake Black Devil Doll?
No.
And no.
I say remake only, it's like in name alone and features a black puppet that bangs women. That I also saw on the big screen. God knows what reason. But that is just, that's doesn't is nearly as I think interesting as watching this, because that one obviously was a lot more tongue in cheek. They knew what they were doing, and it's just you know, this black devil puppet like having sex and murdering you know, ugly porn stars. So it's not nearly as fun or as earnest as this one, but it's if you're into the the raping puppet genre, yeah,
and you are,
yeah, it might be a good follow up.
Yeah, in closing, I just wanted to say that this movie is better than Nuns on the Run.
Well, that just about wraps it up for this puppet. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we are going to talk about Child's Play 2. So stick around.
We would like to extend our apologies to Jack, because unfortunately Chucky is back.
Hi, this is Kevin Batchelder. And this is the Saturday B Movie Reel.
Do something. Shoot it! Shoot it!
That about describes it, yeah.
All right, everybody stay here.
We look specifically at the Sci-Fi Channel's original movies. You know the ones. The ones that air on Saturday night.
Be known throughout the ages as an instant classic.
We need a bigger gator!
Limb cutting, yes. And blood squirting from...
Flying limbs, I called it in my notes.
What could go wrong?
We look on a regular basis at the movies as they come out, and since there have been over 200 of them, we do go back and look at many of them that are now out on DVD. By this point, I had completely forgotten any semblance of seeing if this actually makes any sense from a plot point of view. So come on by, get involved, and have some fun.
Check us out at SaturdayBMovieReel.com.
Our future depends on it. Make it safe.
Stick with you until the very end. Then much to my surprise, he rolled his head and he blinked his eyes. So I took him home to be my very own. And things were really going swell, till my auntie slipped and fell. And Chucky laughed and said, "Now we're alone."
C-H-U-C-K, why'd you come out and play?
Listen up, fool, I'll tell you why. Chucky said,
Chucky's back.
How's it hanging, Phil?
Child's Play 2.
Peekaboo!
He's the original. He'll take your breath away. This fall, Chucky rules.
Did you miss me, Andy? I sure missed you.
Child's Play 2. Keep an eye out for it.
Welcome back to the Junk Food Dinners. The next movie we'll be talking about is Child's Play 2 from 1990. This is a movie written by Don Mancini, who wrote all the Child's Play movies. It's directed by John Lafia, who I don't know anything about him. He also did Man's Best Friend from 1993, the movie about that weird robot dog that's scary.
So, oh, with Lance Henriksen?
Yeah.
A classic.
A true classic in the being afraid of technology genre of the 90s.
He also directed one of my favorite Sega CD games, Corpse Killer.
I saw those guys open up for Quark.
The corpse already killed?
Sometimes, you would think.
Yeah, sometimes you have to kill the corpses again.
Yeah, sometimes they come back.
Yeah. But sometimes dead is better. That's my impression of that guy.
Sometimes. It's not, that's close.
It's not as good as yours.
I'm saving mine up.
Nice. This movie takes place pretty much right after the original Child's Play leaves off. We talked about that movie a long time ago, and I think that we were all of the same mind that it held up pretty well and was surprisingly scary. This movie, it takes place where Andy, he's now in foster homes because, you know, he's trying to tell people this crazy story about how a doll killed everybody. And all of this, so now his mom's in a psychiatric sort of a jail thing. She's gone completely, and this kid's in foster care. He's being taken care of by Garrett Graham, who was awesome. He was in Phantom of the Paradise, Chud 2, Demolition High, all Terror Vision, all the good stuff. And his mom, his new foster mom, is Jenny Agutter, who was the nurse in American Werewolf. And probably in some other stuff.
Logan's Run.
Yes, Logan's Run. And so, you know, it's about Andy sort of adjusting to his new life a little bit. But mostly, it's about Chucky, who after the events of the first one, he was left a fiery ball of plastic and metal. The guys who make the good guy dolls snatch up his body. They make sure it was not defective or anything. And then they turn it into a new doll. And that new doll has the soul of Charles Lee Ray, the terrible serial killer. And that soul within that doll has to find Andy Barkley and transfer his soul into that kid so that he can get out of the body of a doll, because that would suck. He does this using voodoo, as all, you know, it's tradition for serial killers from Chicago to know voodoo. A lot of this movie, surprisingly, as I was watching it, well, first I should say that I've always liked the Chucky movies because they were very keenly aware that people weren't watching these movies for whoever the final girl was, so to speak. People go to see Jason and Freddy and stuff like that for Jason and Freddy. And while, you know, those movies pretty much kept with the formula that Freddy, even, you know, when those guys got crazy and goofy and they were going to Manhattan and Freddy was playing, you know, doing kung fu and stuff, those movies always, you know, settled their main character squarely on some girl who Freddy was trying to kill. In these movies, while Andy plays a large part, even in the second one, I would think that Chucky probably gets most of the lines and most of the screen time in this movie. And all the plot is sort of driven by Chucky, especially in the first 20 minutes. You know, he's back alive now. He's making calls. You know, like, there's no pretending that Chucky is some sort of weird monster that we don't see. In the first one, it was a lot of seeing through Chucky's eyes and not really seeing the doll at all until the end. And in this one, he's just a regular character. Like, we see him in full force. He's making phone calls. He's, carjacking people. He's, you know, putting guns to people's heads. Like, he's just a full-blown character. And I've always loved that about the Chucky movies. And it was cool to see. I haven't seen this in, like, I don't know, a year or two. So it was cool to see that that happened so early in the series, as it certainly takes full effect in the later movies, where Chucky's basically the only character, sort of. So I really like that about this movie. Chucky isn't some creep that, you know, you only see for the last 20 minutes of the movie. He's full on there. So Chucky finds Andy Barclay, and he tries to take his soul a few more times, but it doesn't really work. So Chucky ends up killing his new family, and Andy and his foster, I guess, sister is what you would call it, Kyle, played by Christine Elise, who was on 90210 for a little while. They're the only ones who see that Chucky is there, who aren't dead, and they have to fight it out with him at the Good Guy Factory. And it's all very exciting. I think this movie is great. I'm pretty partial to these Chucky movies. I think Chucky is equal parts scary because he's a creepy little ginger doll, and equal parts, you know, just a cool, funny character. I think he's got, he's got a leg up on people, as, you know, he's very charismatic. He talks a lot, and this was at a time when making a movie about a killer doll could be done realistically with practical effects and stuff, so he looks tremendous. And I like this movie, but it's to be expected. I love these franchise movies. I love Chucky. I think it's great when a little doll kills people. How do you guys feel about this Child's Play 2?
Yeah, I didn't remember shit about this movie. But I did remember that when we did Child's Play on the show, everybody really liked it, and that it was super creepy. And that, you know, we did talk about, like, the slow reveal and, like, the mixture of using the actual doll and like, a person dressed as Chucky, and, you know, just how effective all of those methods were in that film. And so sitting down to watch this, I was, you know, in the back of my brain thinking about all of those things and how creepy Child's Play is. And this movie is not creepy. It's fucked up, and it's, you know, it's nuts, but it's not creepy. So it does take... It's kind of a trade-off. Because while you lose the inherent creepiness and, like, the slow burn factor of the first one, what you do get is more Chucky. And Chucky in this looks amazing. The animatronics are so good. It's, like, unbelievable. The expressions that they get him to make, and, like, just, like, the movement is so fluid. And, I mean, it's all Kevin Yeager just, like, doing his thing. But, yeah, so that, I mean, you get that in scene, and that really pays off. But, yeah, this movie's cool. Andy sucks. He's a little wiener.
Mm-hmm.
Garrett Graham rules. The lady who works at the foster care place is... Laura Palmer's mom, and when it started, I was like, why can I only picture that woman looking scared out of her fucking mind? And then it hit me that she was Sarah Palmer, and that was why, and I can only see her making the most scared expression anyone's ever made. Yeah, this movie's cool, but if you sit down to watch it thinking you're gonna get more of the first Child's Play movie, you know, you're not. But you are going to get something a lot of fun. And I think the opening sequence of them scraping all and, like, putting his face back on and stuff, and, you know, those teeth and that, like, metal skull and stuff, that's very creepy. So there's definitely, like, the creep factor inherently because Chucky is a scary fucking doll. There's some of that, but there's also a lot of humor. Like, one of my favorite things is also pretty close to the beginning, is when Chucky has replaced the good guy's doll in the foster home, and Andy's like, I hate you, and Chucky's like, hi, I'm Tommy. which was the other doll's name, and he kind of like looks down, like his eyes move in a way that looks like really natural and like something that you would do if you were actually trying to come up with that. So I am just like, the entire time I was mostly just being blown away by the animatronics work. But yeah.
Yeah, the effects are great. There are even a few scenes, I don't know if they did this in the first one, I forget, but there are a couple scenes where you see his entire body like walking, and it's not a guy in a costume scene. It's, you know, the actual robot, and it's fucking awesome. That scene rules, where he's walking towards the teacher.
So, yeah, when he's walking around, it looks amazing. I was so like jazzed up about that. I watched a thing on YouTube where it's Kevin Yeager just talking about how they did this. So there's all these like skeleton, like Chucky skeletons, like walking around and stuff, and they were talking about how, you know, now if your animatronic slipped or whatever, you can just go in and fix it with a computer, but then it had to be perfect, so they spent all this time and effort on it, and I think it really, really paid off.
Yeah, I agree with you guys totally. This was actually the Child's Play movie that I think I first saw before even seeing Child's Play 1, because this came out in 1990, and by the time it hit home video and cable, I was just at that age where I was starting to kind of get my interest peaked and things like this. And even before that, I mean, Chucky was such like a cultural phenomenon at the time. Like I think kids now might not remember this, or people have kind of forgotten, but like it seemed like Chucky was everywhere. Like, you know, he was on like the cover of like Cracked magazine and stuff. Mm-hmm. And like his ads for the movies were all over comic books. So like nerdy kids like me, I mean, we're seeing Chucky all over the place. Like he's getting parodied on TV and stuff. So he was a big like cultural thing at the time. So I remember when this came out on home video and subsequently on cable, I saw this a couple times, and I think if I'm not mistaken, this was my first introduction to Chucky. So and I think this is really where the personality of Chucky came to the forefront, because like you said, he's much more out in the open in this movie, and he really has a chance to kind of really get those one-liners in, like, much like, you know, Freddy Krueger became more, you know, less like man in the shadows and more kind of out there wisecrack. And this is where Chucky kind of took that turn as well. And I think this movie is a lot of fun. I had a really good time watching this again. It had been a while since I had seen it. You know, I have to agree, the animatronics look great. Chucky looks awesome in it. Garrett Graham is of course good. Same with Jenny Agutter. You know, Alex Vincent is Andy. You know, he's fine, and he kind of brings it back to the first movie, since he Brad Dourif are really the only returning cast members from the original, the first one. But you know, this, the one thing that I never understood about this movie is, why did they rebuild Chucky? I mean, I can understand like the toy company wanting to confiscate the doll and just to see if there's anything defective with it to like cover their ass from litigation. But why would you rebuild it as a new doll? I mean, that never made any sense to me whatsoever.
You got
to
reuse, recycle, renew.
Yeah, right. Yeah,
why do you hate the Earth, dude?
Well, I'm just saying they're like this billion-dollar toy company, like. They even make a big deal about how, you know, like, we're not used to building them by hand. It's like they're taking all this extra care to rebuild it, but for what purpose? I never understood that. But yeah, I mean, I think this is a lot of fun. Chucky's in full force. It's a lot of fun. And the best part of this movie is the ending. The climax in the toy factory is fucking awesome. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, if you haven't seen this or haven't seen it in a while like me, definitely go back and check this out. Also, I think it has the best cover art of any of the Child's Play movies.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I wanted to mention about Chucky's creepiness again real quick. One thing I think is super creepy about him is he's not just like some crazy like monster. Like, I mean, he's clearly a monster because he's going around killing people. But, you know, he's also taking hostages in this movie and stuff, and I think that's really creepy. There's a scene where he takes Kyle hostage, and they're like driving to go get Andy, and they get pulled over by the cops, and while the cop's walking up, Chucky, you know, like points the knife at her, and he's like, he says, "I'll kill you if I have to," and that's like so scary coming from a doll. Like usually in these doll movies we have you know, like we'll talk about in Dolls and in Puppet Master and stuff like this, they don't talk at all. And it's scary that Chucky talks, but it's even scarier that he's saying the things that, like, a real scary person in real life would say, I think. So I think that's very scary about him. That he's not just, like, you know, this crazy monster killing everybody. He's got these ends, and if that means taking a hostage, then he'll do it. And that's creepy. Also, going back to that ending, and spoiler alert, sort of, but I think this is the most... The way that they get rid of Chucky in this movie is probably the most horrific and painful way that any slasher has been dispatched at the end of a movie in horror history.
Yeah, that could be true.
And, I mean, like, horrible stuff has happened to, like, Michael Myers and Jason and people like this, and even Freddy, but... in this movie, you know, because you have Brad Dourif, who rules as the voice of Chucky, like, when painful things happen to him... you know, him being such a good voice actor, like, he just sells it. And, like, there's a scene where, like, all these horrible things are happening to Chucky, and he's just screaming, like, it's just the most painful screams, like these blood-curdling screams. And I love that about Chucky, that, you know, he, because Brad Dourif is so good, he sells you on the sort of humanness of this monster too, to whereas, I mean, you know, you can drop a house on Jason and he doesn't care, he's not going to say anything, he's not going to scream. You can do horrible things to Freddy, he usually doesn't mind too much, but with Chucky, it's very painful, and I like that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, I think that about wraps it up for Child's Play Deuce. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back to talk about different nondescript dolls.
We gotta let the people know.
I know you will find this hard to believe, but podcasting is not a lucrative business. In fact, Kevin, Mark, and Barker barely have enough money to feed their gambling, drug, and pornography addictions. So, needless to say, they cannot afford big advertising campaigns to promote the show. That's where you come in. You enjoy what you hear every week. Help spread the word about Junk Food Dinner by telling your friends about us. These can be real, flesh and blood friends, or just some creeps you talk to on movie-related message boards. Either way, don't keep JFD all to yourself. Spread the word, you selfish bastard. Just kidding, you know we love you, baby.
And if you like it and you want it, you'll get greedy for it. You'll want it every day of your life, and it can happen to you.
Please. It looked like a safe haven from the raging storm.
It's an odd kind of place. Who'd your folks get it from, Boris Karloff?
Their hosts seemed like the essence of hospitality.
You can stay here as long as you like.
Wonderful.
But appearances can be very deceiving.
What's the matter? Afraid of the dark?
Boss, yeah? Are you scared?
Well, of course not. What's there to be afraid of?
This house?
Oh, don't be.
Son, you like toys? I'm a doll maker. I make the most wonderful toys. Dolls, puppets, soldiers, ballerinas. Nobody wants a doll that's special anymore, that's one of a kind.
The weather brings out creativity. It helps me in my work.
What kind of work is that? Witchcraft?
Never too old to play with dolls. Until you're dead. Dolls.
Welcome back to Junk Food Dinner, episode 131. The final movie we're going to be taking a look at on our Killer Doll Schlocktober episode is, aptly, Dolls from 1987. This is a movie that I had never seen before, but this is one of those ones that I will always remember the VHS cover art from my local video stores, as it was very memorable. Features a scary doll with two eyeballs in her hand and a skull peering through her dead eyes. So this cover always kind of creeped me out, and it was always one that I figured was just like a horror classic, but for whatever reason never got around to seeing it. In more recent years, I was intrigued to check it out as I found out it was directed by Stuart Gordon, who had directed some of my all-time favorite horror movies, such as Reanimator and From Beyond. So I figured now that we were doing a Killer Dolls movie and this is on Netflix Watch Instantly, it's time to finally check out what was behind that creepy VHS cover art. So, I didn't really know what to expect going into this. I assumed there would be some dolls cutting some people up. But the basic storyline of this is there is a horrible couple going out on vacation. And they have their daughter, Judy, in tow. And it's made very clear from the start that these two people are just absolutely horrible. The wife is the stepmom of the girl, as they make abundantly clear at the beginning. And she's just the embodiment of evil stepmother. And the dad is a little better, but not by much. He's also kind of a scumbag. And this daughter is just forced to be vacationing with these two douchebags. They pass a group of hitchhikers, two British girls, inexplicably. One is dressed very much like Madonna. The other one's in a very, new wave kind of outfit. But they pass the hitchhikers. They don't pick them up, but quickly are caught in a storm. Their car gets stuck in the mud somehow. I didn't really understand that, But their car gets stuck in the mud, and they're basically marooned out in the middle of nowhere, in the middle of the countryside somewhere in USA, although this movie was filmed in Italy. And they are forced to take shelter in the nearest location, which is a creepy mansion off in the distance. They bitch the whole time and finally make their way to the mansion, where they just kind of break in and are greeted by the owners of the mansion, David and Rosemary Bauer, played by Ian Patrick Williams and Carolyn Purdy Gordon. They are, you know, a kindly old couple who make dolls in this creepy old house. So they bring the couple in, let them, you know, warm up, have some soup. While they're kind of getting to know each other, the two hitchhikers, as well as this guy, Ralph, played by Stephen Lee, who was the Big Bopper in La Bamba, they bust into the house looking for shelter as well. Stephen Lee, Ralph, has picked up these two hitchhikers, and they too got caught in the storm. They don't really explain how, but have to take refuge there as well. So we've got all these people kind of staying under one roof, and of course the creepy dolls are in tow. This movie is so heavy-handed, you know exactly who's going to die first just by how over-the-top bad they are. It's very like these hitchhikers, they're made out to be very clearly you know, bad people as they're looking to rip off the old folks. The parents, of course, are terrible people. And Ralph and the little girl are, of course, the innocent ones who are spared the creepy dolls, you know, wrath. So this movie, I don't know. On one hand, I thought it was kind of a cool, you know, kind of throwback to old, like, haunted house movies. And there's some cool elements to it. I think it looks really good. I think it's shot well. Some of the doll effects are pretty cool. Most of it's stop motion, but there's some, you know, just kind of cool camera tricks and different kind of techniques that make some of the kills, you know, pretty scary and pretty creepy. For the most part, the little girl and Ralph, they're, you know, overly innocent characters, are a little annoying at times. But I thought that Ian Patrick Williams, who played the old man, the old doll maker, I thought he did a really good job in this. And like I said, there's some pretty cool kill scenes, and there's, you know, kind of a, you know, like I said, just kind of a classic haunted stormy night kind of house movie. So I think there are things to like about this. I didn't think it was terrible by any means, and I kind of had a fun time watching it, but it is so hammy and heavy-handed that it kind of gets kind of played out. But yeah, I'm excited to find out what you guys thought about 1987's Dolls.
Yeah, this, like you said, you know everything that's going to happen in this movie, you know, a half an hour before it does happen, because it's all telegraphed, because, you know, the kids, the punk kids who want to steal from old people, of course they're going to die. And the buttholes who hate children, they're probably going to be killed by dolls as well. And the little kid who likes dolls, and the chubby guy who likes dolls, probably going to live. Just call it a hunch. There's a couple of weird things that this old man says to the kid. At one point he says, "I'm going to put a hot meal in you," which I think is a euphemism.
And you're a sex pervert.
And then later on, he suggests that the little kid stay here and play with our toys. So that's creepy stuff as well.
They make toys!
I don't know.
By trade!
You can't refer to toys as our toys, though. Makes it sound weird.
But he and his wife make them.
Yeah, they're theirs.
Well, all right, maybe that's not so bad by itself, but after telling a kid you're going to put a hot meal in him, it sounds weird. yeah, so this movie, you know, I've been wanting to see it for a long time as well. I tried watching it like a year ago and couldn't get too far into it, but I was kind of sleepy, so it was no fault of the film, but I gave up like 15 minutes in, so I was excited to finally get back to it and see what happens. There's nothing really too notable in it. There's a part where somebody gets turned into a doll, and the effects on that were really cool, I thought. And then there's a part where one of the punk rockers is sort of in betwixt being a punk girl and being a doll, and I thought that was really creepy. And then another scene where I think that same girl gets dragged off by toys that you can't see. That was also creepy. But mostly it's just like kind of goofy and whatever. Most notable, I think, about this movie is the fact that it was like basically a practice run to become Puppet Master, as it was made by a bunch of the same people a couple of years before Puppet Master came out. And this movie has Guy Rolfe as the toy maker, who would go on to be the Puppet Master in Part 3, the Andre Toulon character. And this movie also features a jester doll that kills people and a cowboy doll who kills people with guns, which also showed up in the Puppet Master movies. So I thought this was cool to see, you know, these guys would be like, well, this movie about dolls kind of stinks, but let's take some of the cooler aspects and try again in a couple of years. And so that's mostly what I took away from this movie, is that it was kind of cool for being sort of like Puppet Master.
Yeah, like you guys, the cover of this is burned into my brain. I never watched. I think it's safe to say that I'm friends with Stuart Gordon, because I've met him twice. The last time was with Kevin, so Kevin, you're halfway to being friends with him.
Did you introduce Kevin? Did you say, well, this is Kevin?
Well, this is Kevin.
Well, this is Kevin.
No, I should have. But anyway, so yeah, finding out this was Stuart Gordon and Brian Usna was a producer on it, and you know, Charles Band and all the Puppet Master people, I was intrigued. I wouldn't say I was let down, but you know, this movie's fine. All the stuff that's cool that you said, I would agree with. I like the firing squad. I thought it looked cool when she got shot. Although I don't believe that bullets that small would really wreck you that bad. Mm-hmm. I like when the punk girl goes nuts and she's like smashing all those dolls. Spoiler alert. You know, there's like guts and stuff inside of them. And like gross old like slimy skulls and that kind of stuff. I thought some of the stop motion looked okay. I thought some of it looked kind of bad. I thought the sounds that all the dolls made were really creepy. Again, this is the one that reminded me the most of The Seventh Guest. That just the, you know, the mansion and the creepy doll maker and the souls inside the dolls and that kind of stuff. So that took me back. So I can appreciate that. I thought the little girl and the man-child character were both pretty annoying. I swear to God that little girl is in something else, and I cannot think of what it is. I looked on IMDb, and she only has like 3 credits or something, and none of them are what I'm thinking of, but I swear she's in something else.
You sure it's not Poltergeist 2?
Yes. I think I'm thinking of White of the Eye, but it might not be her. Now that I'm thinking about it and like talking about it instead of just like thinking about it while I watch the movie. This movie's fine. If you've never seen it, you know, check it out. It's not super long. It's certainly not bad. But if you're like, you know, here's some crucial Stuart Gordon movies, I would not put this in the top 5 or anything. But yeah, worth a watch, and certainly cool to see, you know, kind of the genesis of a lot of the Puppet Master stuff too, so.
Yeah, I'll definitely agree with that. I mean, for me, it was kind of middle of the road. I didn't think it was bad, but I didn't think it was amazing either. But right now, it's on Netflix Instant Watch, and that's pretty much the perfect format to watch this. You know, you're not really investing any money, you know, or, you know, big investment into it. So if you're, you know, sitting around looking for just something kind of mindless to watch, like I said, some good gore, some cool kill scenes, and some decent stop motion, some good performances, but all in all, just kind of middle of the road.
Yeah, just a movie to watch sometime, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's not necessarily a bad thing. I don't want to come across like I'm coming down on this movie or anything, but yeah.
This was also released within a month of Gothic, which we talked about last week on the show. So
nice.
Goofy week at the goofy month at the theaters. All right, well, that just about wraps it up for dolls and our doll killer doll episode of Junk Food Dinner. We are going to take a quick break, and sorry, Jack, we will be back momentarily.
JunkFoodDinner.com is the world's oldest and sexiest website. Go to JunkFoodDinner.com for the latest episodes of the show. We also have all of our past episodes. You will also find news about the show, movie news, trailers, funny stuff, and links to our friends.
You can also leave us log comments, because that makes us happy. We hope our website will be a good way for you to spend time during the downtime in life, when celebrities are not going hilariously crazy, and when the Warcraft servers are down.
I can't do it. We'll do it live. Okay. We'll do it live! Fuck it! Do it live! I'll write it and we'll do it live! Fucking thing sucks!
All right, well, that just about wraps up episode number 131 of Junk Food Dinner. I'd like to thank everybody for tuning in and listening. If you'd like to check out what's coming up next in our last 2 weeks of Schlocktober, you can visit our website at junkfooddinner.com. We have the full listing of our Schlocktober movies, so if you want to, study up, watch along with us. Next week is going to be our werewolf theme show. That should be a lot of fun. We've got The Howling from 1981, Silver Bullet from 1985, and American Werewolf in Paris from 1997. So that should be a good. Make sure you tune in for that. Also on junkfooddinner.com, you can find all of our past episodes easily chronicled for your listening pleasure. You can also find nerd news, creepy gifs, trailers, and lots of fun stuff. So make sure you visit junkfooddinner.com. Also on our website, you can find links to our iTunes page. There you can subscribe to the show and have the podcast delivered directly to your iTunes as soon as it's available. And while you're on iTunes, do us a favor and leave a nice 5-star rating or a nice positive review. Help spread the word about Junk Food Dinner. If you don't do the whole iTunes thing, you can also find us on Stitcher and Google Listen. Simply search for Junk Food Dinner on those two things and subscribe that way. If you'd like to get in contact with us and let us know what you think about the show, or if you got some suggestions for movies you want us to check out, please send us an email at jfdpodcast@gmail.com, or even better, let your voice be heard on our voicemail line at 347-746-JUNK. That's 347-746-5865. If you do the whole Facebook and Twitter thing, look for us there and befriend us, follow us, and get involved in the Junk Food Dinner revolution. If you like Parker, check out his other podcast, Pool Party Radio. I will actually be a guest this week as we take a look at the very first season of The Munsters, just in time for Halloween, so that should be a lot of fun. I look forward to recording that, and that should be up shortly after you are hearing this episode. If you like Mark, check him out at the Spectacle Theater, at the Spectacle Theater website at spectacletheater.com, or follow the Spectacle Theater on Facebook and find out what movies are playing at the Spectacle in Brooklyn, New York, and go check out a silly movie. And now's a great time to do it, because you guys are right in the middle of your spooktacular for October, so lots of good movies to check out there.
Yeah, we'll put a hot meal in.
Absolutely. All right, so until next time, this is Kevin Moss, Mark Prado, and Parker Bowman for Junk Food Dinner saying adios, everybody. We will see you next time.